This is Will Friedle from Pod Meets World. Let's be honest. The 90s gave us some great things. The music, totally rad. The fashion, so fly. Home decor, that's a different story. In HGTV's new competitive series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars take on two homes frozen in time. Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us! That's right! I love this American ride!
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah!
And hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Great to have you with us today. A lot going on, and I know a lot of folks are still coming to terms with the loss of Dolly Parton. And may I just say, and we're going to get into more of this a little bit later on in the program, and we have a jam-packed show for you. But the is it just me, or do you very rarely do I feel this, I don't know, this sense of loss, you know, personal loss. I mean, I was a Dolly Parton fan. I didn't listen to her music all the time, but it just feels like, I don't know, there's just a weird vibe in the country. Here is a woman who was, I think, universally loved and respected and appreciated. And there aren't that many folks who are doing that nowadays. I don't think there are that many folks that are that universally loved. Well, yeah, Dylan, yes, of course, me, but I don't want to boast about that. Oh, but Dolly, she had her own theme park. I don't have a theme park. We live in one. It's called Memphis. It's sort of like, I don't know, we're like, what is it, Grand Theft Auto. That's what we are. We live that every day. But that's not Hollywood. That's not what I'm talking about here. Anyway, I don't know, maybe it's just me. We're going to play we've got some great Dolly Parton music. We're going to play in some great clips as well. But I'm going to start with another guy, and his name is Jelly Roll. And Jelly Roll was filling in for Little Jimmy Kimmel the other night on his late night program. I don't know where Little Jimmy is. But anyway, he's got all these guest hosts. He had, what, Rosie O'Donnell. Why did we let this woman back in the country, right? She said she was leaving America, and she was going to live in Ireland. The Irish were like, oh, geez, Alou. Really? And so now she's back. But Jelly Roll, who, by the way, claims to be a believer in Jesus Christ, and we had the videos of Jelly Roll rushing over and greeting President Trump at various events like he's fangirling. But Jelly Roll did a gig on Kimmel last night, and he attacked, or night before last, and he attacked President Trump. I want you to take a listen to what he had to say.
Let's talk about the main event of America this weekend. It was the big IndyCar race hosted by the president. The cars drove through the streets of D.C., and there's Donald Trump, who apparently has never held a flag before. What a job that. How do you up waving a flag? But the president seemed to enjoy the IndyCar race, which was a real switch up for him, because normally he only likes his own race. According to the Washington Post, a lot of doctors are worried about the president's weight. After his last physical, we found out Trump gained 14 pounds, which means he's now tipping the scales at almost 240. It's crazy. Think about this, y'all. In the last few years, I've lost 300 pounds. That means I've lost an entire Donald Trump. And let's be honest, based on his approval ratings, it seems like most of the country wants to do the same thing. Now listen, we should take it easy, y'all. We shouldn't be making fun of the president for his weight, because we know that he would never do that to other people.
I don't speak badly about somebody's physical disability, But he's got the biggest stomach I have ever seen.
He's actually fatter than ever.
The mayor is incompetent, and the governor is a big fat slob.
Reed Hoffman, big fat slob.
I told you, I have a friend of mine. He's fat as... You never saw a guy like this?
He said, Chris Christie's a fat pig. You cannot do that. Chris Christie is not a fat pig. He is not a fat pig. He's not a fat pig. Don't call him a fat pig.
Sir, in the back. Don't call him a fat pig, okay?
I don't talk about people being fat. I refuse to talk about the fact that he's a fat slob. I don't mention it.
Well, if that ain't the pot calling the kettle fat. Well, Mr. President, from one fat pig to another, take it from me that physical fitness is very important. And trust me, you'll be happy to see your penis again.
Wow. Yeah, that's... Look, the guy's a joke. I mean, he weighed over, what, 550 pounds? And you're going to go out there and you're calling Donald Trump a pig? What's wrong with you? So anyway, Jelly Roll is fighting back now. And because MAGA World is really upset about all of this. I mean... He called the president of the United States a man that he supposedly, I mean, led us all to believe that he was a big Trump guy, and turns around and calls President Trump a fat pig. Who does that? I mean, this guy's a sleazeball. By the way, Jelly Roll is a convicted felon who was pardoned by Tennessee Governor Bill Lee. And I really do wish Governor Bill Lee could rescind the pardon. But what is he doing? I mean, is Jelly Roll really a country artist, or is he's a rapper? Is it... I don't consider him to be in the same ranks of, say, like, a Trace Adkins or a Dolly Parton.
He's not like a traditional country guy. He does do a lot of rap, and it's like a mix, I would say.
So he's saying that that he's defending himself, saying he's hosting a late night show, and that's what you do, that you make fun of the president of the United States if you're doing a late night show. Here's the thing. If I have been asked to fill in for little Jimmy Kimmel, could you imagine? If I had been asked and I saw the jokes, no way I'm walking onto that stage at all. Doesn't matter how much money they're going to pay me. You know, there's something called loyalty. Anyway, here's what he had to say last night. So he's back again. And he was like, I have to say, as a former felon drug dealer who has lost 300 pounds, has tattoos all over his face, and won 3 Grammys, this is the weirdest thing I've ever done to stun people. No, it's because not only did you lose 300 pounds, you somehow lost your soul. And I think that's why people are upset. He goes on to say, some people online were upset that I didn't treat the president with reverence and dignity, but I want to remind y'all that I go by the name Jelly Roll. I don't even treat myself with reverence and dignity. One day I'm going to look in the mirror I looked into the mirror and said, you, my friend, are a pastry. Frankly, I think most people were surprised I had any opinions at all. They see a guy that looks like me and assume the only opinion I have is whether I prefer my meth, crystal, or classic. Well, clearly, maybe he was doing both before the show. So anyway, ladies, this is all very odd. But again, you know, you just have to be careful with these celebrities. People like the Jelly Rolls and, what is it, Kanye West? What does he go by now? Yay.
Whatever. It changes by the day.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. But again, they all claim to be out there and to be these passionate followers of Jesus. And the next thing you know, all the Christians in America are putting these guys up on pedestals and they're worshiping them, and they're just waiting for some sort of a prophetic word to come out of the voice of these people, when in fact, I don't know if they're Christians or not. And even if they are new Christians, it takes time for them to learn and to be discipled, and you're going to turn around and you're going to make them the next Billy Graham with tattoos. And you're surprised? You're surprised that Jelly Roll came out and said this? No, I am surprised, because I thought the guy, I mean, every time Trump was at an event, Jelly Roll was thundering over and he was wanting to meet the president, and the president probably had no idea who the guy was. He was like, who names their kid Jelly Roll? Maybe they should, I don't know, he should get a new name, Tub O'Lard. He could be Irish. Oh, there you go. It's the Irish rapper Tub O'Lard. Unbelievable. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Jelly Roll. And this just, he's basically, he just Bud Lighted himself. I mean, that's what Jelly Roll did. Kind of reminds me of, remember the Dixie Chicks? Well, that, now they're just known as the Chicks. And they're, one of them may not be a chick, but they claim to be chicks. But they went down this road with what George W. Bush and completely lost their fan base. And now they're basically a bunch of, you know, unattractive, overweight folk singers. Nobody wants to go watch. I don't know. Dylan, did you see this one coming? Did you see Jelly Roll going woke?
You know, it's interesting. He was like up on the CMA Awards a few months ago. He was like, you know, sharing the gospel. He was like this Christian guy, like you were mentioned. And it exactly went like what you said. All the Christians like propped him up. He was this big celebrity Christian guy now. I think the fame got to him. So in a way, I think I did see this coming. But like Jimmy Kimmel Show's got to be the lowest like point that you can get to host. I don't know. That friendship, I don't know where that even comes from. Like, it doesn't make a sense.
I don't get it. And again, I mean, he may be a Christian. I don't. Do you know of any Christians that talk like he talked on national TV?
Oh, no, not really.
I don't either.
Not publicly.
No, I mean, or at least not, you know, maybe a church business meeting. But right. Yeah, I mean, you know, come on. Who talks? I mean, that's insane. All right. Look, we've got to take a break here. Your reaction to Jelly Roll, are you surprised that Jelly Roll has gone woke? 901-260-5926. Also taking your Dolly Parton stories. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
The flood of people, at least 10 million illegals, have poured into this country.
Has the American dream disappeared, or is it waiting to be rebuilt? This weekend, the America 250 film series presents Return of Our American Dream. Hear the stories that confront decline, restore hope, and call Americans back to opportunity, work, family, and freedom. Saturday and Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Salem News Channel.
All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stern's Radio Show. Coming up, our good buddy Congressman Jim Jordan is going to drop by. Also, a huge anniversary for our friends at Sight and Sound. They're celebrating their 50th anniversary. And if you have not been to a Sight and Sound production, you don't know what you're missing. It's just absolutely beautiful. Also, a little bit later on, Chris Ruddy, the CEO of Newsmax, joins us, along with Ali Trioli, who is with the Republican National Committee. Big doings coming up in Dallas. Let's go to the phone line, though. 901-260-5926. Say hello to Andrew in Gainesville, Georgia. Andrew, I understand you have a Dolly Parton story.
Yes, sir, Todd. So absolutely wanted to reach out and share a very special story. And to the people of Eastern Tennessee and the family of Dolly Parton, there's a lot of missing her today, but I'm thankful there's a lot of rejoicing. And definitely an example of a great American who truly had love in her heart and made an impact. I just wanted to give a little story.
Well, let's get to it. Yeah, go for it.
So yes, sir. So my family grew up very similar to Dolly. And my grandmother in particular would have been 100 years old 2 weeks ago. And the old saying was, very similar background, was it didn't matter if it was a congressman or the governor or the local farmer down the street, everybody would be polite to each other. They would go out of their way to help each other. And most importantly, they would take the time to say, how are you doing? And they were happy to see each other. And thankful that Dolly very much had love in her heart and the love of Jesus in her heart. And I wanted to share with you, as my family has been blessed and growing, we're able to go to Dollywood about 3 or 4 times a year now. And my little girl, she's 7 years old, but it started when she was about 2 years old. She affectionately would call the Dreammore Hotel at the Butterfly Castle. And of course, butterflies were special to Dolly and was always a reminder of her deep roots in Eastern Tennessee. And what's really special about, as my family has grown, that has become a place of core memories. And Dolly was so big on the smallest act of kindness can make the most impact for a lifelong memory. And I wanted to share something really special because her Coat of Many Colors songs reflects this so much. She said, "We were poor, but we had love," just like my grandmother used to say. And she lived that with everything she did, especially when she came home to Eastern Tennessee. So I'm from North Georgia, but a lot of my neighbors and friends, we go out of our way to go to Dollywood. And as you were talking yesterday, that cinnamon bread, that's a real thing. It's delicious. But what really is special in the legacy that will continue, as her nephew said so confidently yesterday, as a feeling of rejoicing and thankful for the blessing of every day, is that love was real.
Right.
And that goes all the way back to her childhood. And she in particular, if you really want to know the impact of, because they called her the dreamer in chief, the chief dreamer with Dolly. But if you really want to know the impact of the glue that holds it together, speak to the people that, if you walk around the park, that's sweeping up the floor. Speak to the person that's painting the trim and keeping that place spotless. Talk to the kind gentleman in the hotel.
Right.
That's flipping the omelets. And she knew every one of them. They all knew her, and it was family. And an example of that real quick.
Very quick. Yeah, let's get to it.
My daughter went last October with my mom and dad, and Dolly had already predetermined that if somebody was going to take the time to go to her house, so to speak, she was genuinely happy to see them. And long story short, there was no room in the hotel. It was completely booked. Out of the goodness of Dolly's heart, she personally made sure that my little girl got to stay in the Butterfly Castle, and it was Dolly's room herself.
Well, Andrew, we appreciate you calling in with that story, and I know a lot of folks around the country have very similar stories. Thank you again for the call. The thing is about Dolly Parton, I think, is that she was just a genuine human being. It was funny. You know who some of her biggest critics were? The Christians, so-called Christian community out there. And the reason why is she didn't fit into their preconceived box of how a Christian should behave or what a Christian should do. And I think that bothered her a little bit over the years. But again, Dolly Parton was a person of deep and abiding faith in God and grew up in a Christian home. I believe her grandfather was a minister. So just a fine, fine human being. And, you know, it bothers me. There was an interview she did with Barbara Walters, and we're going to play some of this in a little while. This crazy interview where Barbara Walters did her best to insult Dolly Parton and asking her about her hillbilly people. I mean, that interview, and again, we're going to play this. We'll try to get it in this hour of the show. That interview really encapsulates what Hollywood and the media and the elites really think about those of us in flyover country. They despise us. Let's go to Pat in Gainesville, Georgia. Hi, Pat. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm just calling to talk about how much I love Dolly Parton. And I've listened to her since I was a little girl and sang her songs and just grew up with her music. I'm a country girl, and I love country music. And I could hardly keep from crying yesterday and listening to everything about her on TV. It was just heartbreaking when I heard that.
Well, Pat, I'll tell you this. What I loved about Dolly, that voice, I mean, she was the real deal, played that guitar, and her voice, there was no auto-tune, it was there, Pat.
That's true.
Yeah.
She loved everybody, and if you never met her, you still love her.
There you go. All right, Pat, got to run, but thank you for that call. 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. You know, they tell you the only way to retire with enough money is to put your life savings into a 401k or IRA and just roll the dice on Wall Street. But what if there's a better way?
It's time to get the truth and discover a better way to grow and protect your money. Bank on Yourself is the proven retirement plan alternative banks in Wall Street desperately hope you never hear about. It gives you guaranteed predictable growth and retirement income, tax-free retirement income, and more control over your money. You'll know the minimum guaranteed value of your retirement savings at every point along the way, and you can access your money before age 59 and a half without government penalties. You can get a free report that reveals how you can bank on yourself and access your money income tax-free in retirement, enjoy guaranteed growth, and have more control over your money. A Bank on Yourself professional can answer any of your questions. Just go to bankonyourself.com/Starnes and take back control of your financial future. That's bankonyourself.com/Starnes.
And I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets, the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5.
All right, welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show, everybody. One of the Dolly Parton classics. Great movie, great song, and I do wonder if Congressman Jim Jordan, as he's running around Capitol Hill in his shirt sleeves, Congressman, are you one of those guys singing that song? Is that any Dolly Parton on the playlist?
Yeah, well, it's funny because when I grew up, that's all the only kind of music my parents would let us listen to was, well, back then we called it country and Western. You know, it was the old joke. There were two kinds of music, country and Western, right? That's all my dad would let us listen to. So yeah, we heard Dolly Parton, Charlie Pride, all those old Johnny Cash, all the old timers. And yes, he was quite the American entertainer and amazing lady.
You know, Congressman, I remember when I was a kid. You know, my parents had they bought a van and it had an 8-track player in it, and it was all about Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers, and the Kenny Rogers, the Gambler 8-track got stuck in there. And I think to this day, I can sing every single song from memory.
Yeah, of course, yeah. You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, right? Know
that's it.
Away. I remember that.
Congressman, good to have you with us. Of course, Congressman Jordan, Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Congressman, a lot going on with the midterms, and I want to get to that in just a minute. You have been all over the reports of ICE agents going in. What is the latest news? Over 1,000 illegals arrested just in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. That's pretty jaw-dropping.
Yeah, well, and even more so is how many of them had also committed a crime and were out on the street. This is something our committee's been digging into. This prosecutor there in Fairfax County, Steve Viscano, who had the policy in place that says we will take into account a criminal's illegal their immigration status when deciding how we're going to charge him. And in other words, unequal treatment. So if an American does a crime, he gets charged one way. But if you're an illegal migrant, you do the same crime, you get a lesser charge or a better plea deal because they don't want to jeopardize you getting sent out of the country. That's how ridiculous this sanctuary jurisdiction policy is. So we're looking into what Mr. Descano has been doing there in Northern Virginia. We're looking at Alvin Bragg and Cox and Krasner, Larry Krasner up in Philadelphia, what they're doing there. Alvin Bragg up in New York and others, because it's just so egregious what the sanctuary jurisdiction policy around the country.
You know, and aside, you know, just set aside for a minute the criminal illegals that are out there committing heinous crimes. You've also got the reports of illegals that are voting, non-citizens voting. I think there was a big story developing in New Jersey where they is this true? They registered thousands of non-citizens to vote?
6,000, yeah. Yeah, 6,000 of them were on the voter rolls. Some of them actually voted in federal elections, which is against the law. So we're looking at that. And then parallel with that is we're doing an investigation into Act Blue. We just deposed we deposed several people with Act Blue, and over six people now we've talked to. Every single one of them's taken the fifth, and some of them, we had the one who took the fifth in front of the CEO of Act Blue took the fifth in front of the committee. So you had like the people who are the key lawyers for Act Blue who've resigned. We bring them in. We get documents. We ask them questions. They all take the fifth. And I think that's because they were accepting foreign contributions to Act Blue, which is, as you know, the big fundraising machine for the Democrat Party.
And Congressman, I think this is one of the reasons why the Republican voters are so frustrated right now with the Senate not moving forward on the Save America Act. They know these kinds of things are going on. Do you anticipate that ever crossing the finish line? What is it going to take?
I do at some point because it's just so common sense. And I think, you know, now will we get it done this session? I certainly hope so. We've passed it multiple times in the House. I think it also underscores, frankly, Todd, that it's time to get rid of the filibuster. We all know that if Democrats win back the majority in the Senate, they will end the filibuster. Heck, they tried to do it, but for Senator Manchin and Sinema, independent, a few years ago, they would have got rid of the filibuster then. And so the president is right. This is something that we have to get in place so that we have confidence in our election process. It's just that important. And we know that if the Democrats, like I said, if they win, they're going to get rid of the filibuster and do all kinds of things that they've been talking about, like, you know, packing the court, like adding, making the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico states so they can win another couple United States senators from each of those jurisdictions, which, you know, what then would be states. So all those things are coming. That's why we need to get rid of the filibuster and make sure we get this thing passed. But I don't know if that's going to happen. Maybe we can get elements of it in this process called reconciliation. And if we can, we should certainly do it.
Do you think that there is some maybe, I don't know, intentionality on slowing down the president's agenda up on Capitol Hill, knowing that, I mean, honestly, you know, the president's about to be a lame duck president, and I think you're going to have a lot of folks within the party trying to figure out, okay, who's going to run the party? Will it be the Trump MAGA crowd? Will it be the establishments? Will it be another coalition?
Yeah. I do think the Democrats are trying to run out the clock, but, you know, President Trump has a way of making sure that the things he told the voters he was going to do, that he gets done. That's why one of the reasons I appreciate him so much. You know, I always say we make this job too complicated. It's pretty basic. What'd you tell the voters you were going to do when you ran for it? If you get elected, do what you said. He does, and he's going to stay focused on that, which is good. But, yeah, the Democrats are trying to stymie that. They're just who they are. But worse yet, and I think a key element in this upcoming midterm election is we also know what the Democrats want to do. It's frightening. I mean, you just look at what they're telling us what they want to do on so many policy areas. I mean, think about the once great party of FDR and JFK is now anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, socialist, and having all kinds of other crazy policy positions like men and women sports, getting rid of ICE, defunding the police, shutting down the government. You could just keep going on and on. So, it's why they want to try to stop President Trump's agenda. They're not going to be successful in that, I don't believe. And they want to implement their crazy left-wing policies, which I think is a key thing we have to tell the voters about here over the next 70 days.
Yeah. Where did this come from? Where did the you know, this generation, at least the millennials and Gen Zers, seem to be embracing socialism, which I really think is communism. You've got political Islam out there. Why? What's the attraction? Where are they getting all of this from?
Well, I think it's from our education system. I mean, we've seen what was happening at so many of these universities around the country. The anti-Israel bias, the anti-Semitic activity there, all the crazy DEI and woke stuff that was being taught there. President Trump and Secretary McMahon are trying to make a change there. Thank goodness, and I think we're having some success. But I think years and years of that, not to mention what parents I think learned during COVID, what some of their children were being taught in primary and secondary education as well. Some of this just almost like anti-American type of studies that were being done, just wrong. So I think all that's had an impact. But we just got to come with the facts. And frankly, one of the things I think we need to talk about is just what a great country it really is.
Yeah.
Now, I know we have some concerns with the cost of things, and you know, particularly for young families trying to buy that first home, and I understand that. But this is the best country ever, 250 years, amazing place where if you got a goal, you got a dream, and you work hard, good things happen. And that's not the case in so many other places around the world. And I think we need to talk about that as well, over the next several several weeks as we get into this campaign.
Do you think that you guys can need to do a better job of communicating that message to these Gen Z voters who are working their tails off? I hear from them on the show all the time, and they're saying that they're having a hard time making ends meet. They're hard workers. They've got jobs. They can't get that starter home. Hearing from folks about the gas prices being high. You've got the cattle ranchers now that are in a tizzy over the president's decision to bring in the foreign beef. Do you think the messaging is a little off right now?
Well, I think we have to talk about the good things we've done, things we told the voters we were going to do, but we also have to recognize things still cost too much, largely because of what the Biden administration did with their unbelievable amount of spending and all the policy positions they had. But I do think we have to acknowledge, things cost too much, and we're working on that. But never forget, we told the voters we were going to secure the border. We did. We told the voters we were going to cut taxes. They'd have more money in their pocket. If we hadn't done that, it'd be even more costly for families and for young people and Americans today. So I think we just have to give them the facts and the truth. And frankly, also, as I said, point out just how ridiculous, just how dangerous the policies of the left are. And I think that's the campaign. And if we do that, I think we're going to be able to keep the majority.
All right, you've got the big event coming up in Dallas, this RNC midterm convention. Are you going to be there? And what's going to happen?
Yeah, we're going to be there. I think the I saw some information today. The vice president is going to speak on the first night. He'll be the key address, and then of course the president on the second night. I think the president's going to be maybe even talking there both days. I think that's important, and I think you'll see it'll be just what we described, highlighting what we've done that's consistent with what we told the voters we were going to do in the 2024 election, and then also pointing out where the left, where the DSA, the Donnies of the world, where they want to take the country, and how scary that is.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys are doing that, Congressman, because this DSA stuff is scary. And if we're not careful, we could end up electing some very dangerous people to the Congress.
Yeah, I've been doing an event about a week ago, a little over a week ago, for a candidate. And the guy hosting the event said that it was really interesting. Business guy, and he stood up and kind of kicked things off, but he said, we need to understand it can happen here. And he was making the point that what happened in places like Venezuela, where the left gets control and all the crazy policies they then put in place, and then what that means to the country, what that means to families, what that means to private property rights and everything else. He says, we need to understand this is where the left wants to take us. And it was a pretty powerful message, and I think well received and understood that, this is how serious it really all is.
Yeah, well said. All right, Congressman, we're going to leave it there. Always appreciate the great information. We always enjoy having you on the show.
Thanks, Todd. Take care. Thanks for all your good work.
All right. Congressman Jim Jordan, everybody, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, laying out the plan, telling the American people here on the show exactly what it's going to take for Republicans to maintain control of the House and the Senate, which, by the way, look, traditionally, whoever the president is, that party always fares very poorly in the midterm election. So we're looking at bucking a trend here. And again, I find it just impossible to believe that the American people want to send communists to the Capitol. I just find that very difficult to believe. All right, you heard from Congressman Jordan, ladies and gentlemen. What is it the Republicans need to do to get that message out there? What is that message that's going to resonate with voters? Our telephone number, 901-260-5926. Again, that number, 901-260-5926. Now, in the break, ladies and gentlemen, head over to Amazon. We need your help. My new book is under attack by the leftist, and they are posting negative reviews. And what they want to do is they want to tank the book on the Amazon rating. So we need your help. So if you would go over to Amazon, leave us a nice 5 or 4 star rating and say something nice about the golden age, how Trump saved America, we would greatly appreciate it. And if you have not gotten your copy, you got to get a copy. By the way, Congressman Jim Jordan, one of those who endorsed the book, The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. We'll be right back.
This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. Reese, our content agent, wrote the copy based on our best practices, like mentioning Monday.com 3 times. That was the second. Johnny, our coordination agent, built the timeline and kept everyone aligned. Olivia, our human creative director, stayed in the loop. Because agents are great, but they don't always know when a joke lands. She had one note: tell listeners it only takes minutes to build an agent. So, minutes. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. ToddStearns.com is our website. I'd encourage you to go and check out all of our great stories. We also have the piece up on Jelly Roll. You're going to be able to watch the video as well over what he said. Also, you can sign up for our free newsletter as well as our podcast. All right. I want to play this audio. This is Barbara Walters interviewing Dolly Parton. And the condescension here is off the charts. Take a listen.
Dolly, where I come from, would I have called you a hillbilly?
If you had of, it would have been something very natural, but I would have probably kicked your shins or something. No, actually.
But when I think of hillbillies, am I thinking of your kind of people?
I think you probably are. The
your
people that grew
people.
Up where I was were the ones that you would consider the little Abner people, Daisy May and that sort of thing. They took that kind of thing from people like us, but we were very proud people, people with a lot of class. It was country class, but it was a great deal of class, and most of my people were not that educated, but they are very, very intelligent, good common sense, horse sense, we called it.
Dolly, did you look like this when you were a kid?
Not quite.
I mean, you didn't have the blonde wig, but when
no.
You went into school, when you were 11, 12, 13, was it this about you?
Well, you mean the full figure?
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, I thought that's what you meant. Well, actually, I've always been pretty well blessed. As a child, I grew up fast. Other members of my family, you know, have done the same.
My assistant asked me something, and I'm going to blame it on her because I wouldn't have had the nerve otherwise. Is it all you?
Well, I can't show you here right on television.
Take your word for it.
I get asked that question. I always answer that because people are in awe of the whole thing. You know, a lot of people say I have. A lot of people say I haven't. I always say that if I hadn't have had it on my own, I'm just the kind of person that would have had me some maid.
You don't have to look like this. You're very beautiful. You don't have to wear the blonde wigs. You don't have to wear the extreme clothes, right?
No, it's certainly a choice. I don't like to be like everybody else. I've often made this statement that I would never stoop so low as to be fashionable. That's the easiest thing in the world to do. So I just decided that I would do something that would at least get the attention. Once they got past the shock of the ridiculous way I looked and all that, then they would see there was a parts of me to be appreciated. I'm very real where it counts, and that's inside, and as far as my outlook on life and the way I care about people and the way I care about myself and the things that I care about. But I just chose to do this, and it's show business is a money-making joke, and I just always like telling jokes.
You ever feel...
So, anyway, it goes on. Look, I've got a chapter in the book on this very issue. It's about the Beverly Hillbillies, and when CBS executives came in and decided that even though shows like the Beverly Hillbillies and Petticoat Junction and Green Acres were incredibly popular and were huge money makers, they felt that it dumbed down the network, that it wasn't highbrow enough, that it was beneath them to broadcast these stories that resonated with the American people. Much like what Barbara Walters said when she talked about Dolly Parton and her hillbilly people. You know, they're so dismissive of that. And that's a big problem in this country because Dolly said something very poignant. She said that while they may not be classically educated, they had a lot of common sense. And that's ultimately what we're missing in this country. We are missing a healthy dose of common sense. And Dolly Parton, ladies and gentlemen, at the end of the day, was a big-hearted woman. well, among other things. All right, got to take a break here. 901-260-5926, our number. Sight and Sound Theater coming up next.
Hey, I've got the campaign brief ready, built from last quarter's data and the competitive landscape.
Approved. Oh, agents, where would we be without you?
Somewhere with a lot more tabs open.
Create your first Monday agent in minutes at monday.com.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
Shatters, that's right, I love this American ride.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Great to have you with us, border to border, coast to coast, across the fruited plain. And we've got some exciting news. The station, the show, is soon going to be launching in Seattle, Washington, and also Pensacola, Florida. So we're very excited to be adding a new affiliates to the Todd Starnes Radio Show family. And we're just honored that you are visiting with us, whether you are listening to us on the radio, you're watching us on TV today. We're going to have a lot of fun. We have a very, very busy hour coming ahead. Of course, we're also remembering the great Dolly Parton. As a matter of fact, I believe tomorrow on radio stations across the nation, radio stations are going to be simulcasting Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You as just a way of saying goodbye to a great American patriot and, of course, the queen of country music. I want you to write down our telephone number. You'll need this to call in today, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Also, folks, well done on book sales. My new book, The Golden Age, doing quite well on the book charts, and that's all because of you. This coming Sunday, I'll be speaking at Franklin Road Baptist Church right outside of Nashville, and we certainly hope to meet a lot of our listeners and readers there. I am so excited about our next guest. I am a huge, huge fan of what this family has been doing. They have produced some of the most incredible, and this is better than Broadway. It's not the equivalent of Broadway. This is better than Broadway. Family-friendly productions produced by our friends at Sight and Sound. And we're just so honored to have Katie Miller, the Vice President of Brand Development at Sight and Sound, joining us today. Katie, great to have you with us.
It is an honor to be here. Thank you so much.
So first of all, huge fan of what you guys are doing. It's just absolutely incredible. And this is, I think a lot of people are surprised to learn this is a family venture. And I want you to take us back through and tell us how you guys got started in the theater business.
Absolutely. So we are celebrating our 50th anniversary this year.
Wow.
And my grandparents, Glenn and Shirley Eshelman, grew up right here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. My grandfather was a fifth generation dairy farmer and wanted to be a farmer for his whole life, and tragically lost his mother at 17 years old. And shortly thereafter, his father came home and said, "I don't want to do this without your mom. You have to find a new vocation. I just sold the family farm." And so shortly thereafter, my grandfather found himself as a young newlywed trying to make ends meet, and he began relying on his creativity, which really set the stage for them. They began taking multimedia slideshows all throughout the nation, eventually raising enough money to be able to purchase and build our first theater, and we have grown from there over the last 50 years.
Now, we base our show in my hometown of Memphis, Tennessee, so it's a little easier for us to get to Branson than it is to get to Pennsylvania. Have you been surprised by the response that you guys have had over the years? I mean, we're talking, I mean, how many people have actually been to one of the shows?
It's hard to keep count, but we have estimated that over 40 million people have experienced a Sight and Sound production, whether that is coming to one of our two locations in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, or Branson, Missouri, or through our streaming platform or our feature films in movie theaters. To answer your question, we are completely overwhelmed. I grew up here. I've never not been a part of Sight and Sound. I don't think when I was a 4-year-old on our first little stage right down the road from where we're at right right now, doing review style shows that I even could have imagined, or anyone else in my family for that matter, how the Lord was going to grow this mission and this ministry into what it is today.
And I think it's important that that's an important word, isn't it? Ministry, as much as it is a business, this is really a ministry.
Yeah, it is wholeheartedly. So our name Sight and Sound comes from the verse in Matthew 13 where the disciples ask Jesus, why do you speak to the people in parables? And he responds to them and says, because in seeing, they do not see, and in hearing, they do not hear. So I teach them with story. And for us, that is the core of what we do and what we feel called to do. It is to spread the gospel, to inspire people with the power of the scriptures through the same method that Jesus used, which is telling stories. So that's where our name Sight and Sound came from.
I think it's interesting that, you mentioned the, story part of it. I was watching an interview, an old interview with Dolly Parton last night doing some show prep, and she made an interesting observation. I think it really surprised the interviewer. She said as much as she enjoys, you know, the performance aspect, you know, she loves the storytelling, and Dolly was a songwriter, and she loved telling those stories. And I have to imagine you guys must find some kinship there.
Absolutely. You know, I think storytelling takes on so many different forms. And for us, yes, what we do is live stage productions, it's feature films, streaming, all of those things. But the core of it is bringing truth, hope, and inspiration to the world through the message and the method of telling stories. And Dolly Parton absolutely did that along with so many others throughout history, honestly.
And that cinnamon bread at Dollywood, geez, Lou, that's a religious experience in and of itself, I have to imagine.
Absolutely.
We are honored to have Katie Miller with us from Sight and Sound. She's the Vice President of Brand Development. I'm curious about the productions. I mean, these are, I worked and lived in New York City for 15 years when I was at Fox News Channel, and I go to the Broadway shows all the time. What you guys are doing is so far beyond that. How did you get to that point, and where do you find all of these great performers?
They come from all over. We truly do. I know I'm biased, but I truly do believe we have the best team in the world. We have over 900 employees. They are like-minded. They're here with us, linking arms every day, bringing their unique skill sets to bring these stories to life. And so whether they are, you know, helping to actually write, direct, produce, build the shows themselves, whether they are performing and in front of the curtain, or all of our backstage teams behind the curtain, or those welcoming our guests, we have just the most amazingly talented people that are truly from all over the country, and a lot of them from the areas that we're in, but many, many from all over the country. And it is just such an honor to work alongside them every day.
I'm curious about the audiences. Who would normally come to a Sight and Sound theater show?
Well, one of my most favorite things right now is just hearing, as we celebrate this year, this 50th year, the multi-generational experiences that people are having. So we're getting inundated as we celebrate with people going, I remember some of those early shows. I came with my grandparents, and now I'm a grandparent bringing my grandchildren and my family. And it is just so meaningful to watch, you know, to walk into the lobby as a show is loading in and watch people that are of all ages. I love to say we are here for children ages 2 to 92. We all get to become kids together and experience these stories. And we welcome people from all 50 states, from usually over 75 to 100 countries every year. Wow. Through our doors. And so it is a multi-generational and multicultural experience because, you know, these stories are universal. We can't take credit for them. They have been changing lives for thousands of years. We just get the opportunity to tell them.
You know, I think many theaters, when they hear those numbers, you know, just the tens of millions of people that have come to a Sight and Sound production, you know, and it seems like the folks who run Hollywood and some of the other big companies, they just don't seem to get it, that there is an audience for this sort of programming and these kinds of stories that you guys tell.
Yeah, it's true. And I will say one of the things I think we feel the most encouraged about is that faith in the arts seems to be a way that the Lord is permeating not just our nation, but the world at large. And to watch, even in my own, you know, observations over the last decade alone, the amount of faith-based attractions that are growing, movies for sure. I think we all can see there are more and more films coming to the movie theaters that are stories of inspiration and faith, and streaming platforms. You know, it has grown exponentially in the last decade, and we are just grateful to be able to play our part in that. But there are many doing awesome work.
So let's talk about the big 50th anniversary. Do you guys have anything? Are you doing anything special to commemorate the big 50?
Well, we had our second feature film come to movie theaters this past spring, A Great Awakening, which told the story of Ben Franklin and George Whitefield. It was a story of liberty. Yeah, which felt like so important to not just hit in our 50th anniversary, the story of liberty and identity in Christ, but to hit on the 250th anniversary of our nation felt really important to us and special to us. We also have Joshua here on stage in Lancaster and David on stage in Branson. And we did have some fun. We had a big, huge birthday party in both locations for our employees and their families with fireworks and food. And we just had the best time celebrating and actually worshiping together and just thanking the Lord for his faithfulness throughout our story. And so it has been such a fun celebratory year, and so much on the horizon to come as the years unfold too, hopefully.
And I understand what you guys have a great website, sight-sound.com. And if people, what they want to get tickets, and I have to imagine shows are selling out. So you would recommend people getting tickets there online.
Yes, absolutely. As we start winding down this year, we are getting very sold out for the fall. So go and get your tickets early. But we, Joshua and David, they're both leaving the stages here in the locations that they're in. So if you want to see them, this is the moment to do it.
All right. Katie, I'm going to call an audible here. You know, one of the things they did in Broadway, you know, to make sure they got good media coverage, you know, the shows, they would invite some of the, you know, the broadcasters, some of the show hosts and the news anchors to maybe have a walk-on role in some of the shows. So if you guys if you need a radio host for like David or something, you know, we can maybe a newfangled translation.
Listen, the door is open, and we will find a costume and give you a part.
I love it.
So you let me know when.
Now, I'm not a Baptist. I can't dance, but I can do everything else. So it's
that's all right. I can't dance either, and I somehow grew up on the stage, so it's okay.
All right. Well, Katie, look, congratulations. We're just huge fans and have been for years of what you guys are doing, and we want to be able to promote all the great things that are happening. Thank you for what you and your family are doing for the country.
Thank you, and thank you so much. We appreciate you. It is a mutual honor and gratefulness for what you're doing, too, so thank you so much.
All right, Katie Miller, everybody, with Sight and Sound, and again, go to that website, sight-sound.com, and check out all the great shows, the great streaming platforms, lots of great stuff. Dylan, did I overstep?
No, I think you're right. I think you're fine.
I think I look good in, like, a beard and a robe.
I think you could pull it off if you really tried. Put your heart and soul into it.
Right, exactly. But the dancing, we got no rhythm. My denomination has no rhythm.
No, we're the hands in pockets, two-step, side to side.
We can't even raise our hands.
No.
I think there's something genetically, you know, where
it won't go up like above, you know, chest length.
I was at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, you know, when I was speaking out there, and they had just an incredible worship band. And people, you know, they were raising their hands, and I wanted to, but I couldn't get it, like, past, you know, a certain level.
No, we can't. We weren't raised that way.
No.
It just can't happen.
No, we weren't. But again, by the way, you need to take Mrs. Producer to a Sight and Sound show.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We have to get in touch with Adam Alan Pillow, who's out in Branson. Maybe he can get us tickets.
I think we have to now.
All right. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, Sight and Sound. And I'm just telling you, these shows are absolutely spectacular. All right, we've got to take a break here and pay some bills. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. Great to have you with us today. Our telephone number, 901-260-5926. Any of you folks been to one of these Sight and Sound productions? Pretty spectacular what this incredible family has been able to do. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. All right, coming up, we're going to be talking to Chris Ruddy. Chris, by the way, is the chief executive officer of Newsmax. And, of course, we're big fans of Newsmax. Millions of Americans now watching Newsmax. President Trump says he made the switch, watching great shows with Greta, Rob Schmidt, Rob Finnerty, Carl Higbee. So if you're tired of big media, start watching Newsmax. It is absolutely free to start. Go to NewsmaxPlus.com for immediate access. That's NewsmaxPlus.com. Once you start, you're not going to stop. NewsmaxPlus.com. Download the app. It is incredibly easy to switch. Again, NewsmaxPlus.com. All right. Wow. Dylan, I'm still trying to get over this jelly roll thing, and I don't know why this bothers me, but the guy's a grifter. You know, he is a gospel grifter. I think he pretended to become a Christian so that he could get all these Christian fans, and then he turns around and he cusses like a sailor on national TV.
I think he's either a grifter, which I do think that he's a grifter. He's either that or he just surrounded himself with the worst people. I mean, you see what fame does to other people. Like, you just go and you meet someone who's like, hey, just do this and we'll give you the world. You know, that you know, secret society that they all say that they have. I think that could be part of it. But, you know, he did get big off this whole transformation. He lost all this weight. He, like, shared the gospel, and all these people started being fans of his out of all of a sudden. Now he's like, I don't know what he is now. I don't even know what this is.
I think he got big off the jelly rolls.
For sure. He did.
That could be. Or the Little Debbies.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. New information out of the great state of Texas. This polling data, this is they went in Texas Southern University. They went in and looked at the 15th, 28th, and 34th congressional districts. Now, these are districts that President Trump won overwhelmingly in 2024. Now, according to their polling data, James Tallarico has a solid lead over Ken Paxton in those three congressional districts that President Trump carried by double digits. The pollster surveyed 700 likely voters in the Texas 15. Trump won by 18 points. 50% of those respondents chose Tallarico, 42% Paxton. In the 28th, Trump won by 10. Tallarico, 51%. Paxton, 41%. The Texas 34, Trump won by 10. Tallarico, 53. Paxton, 42. What is going on there in Texas? I will say, I was talking to somebody last night about this, and they say one of the big challenges is Paxton has not been out there doing as much campaigning as they thought that he was going to, and he's not doing that. So again, I appreciate Jim Jordan coming on the show. If you heard that conversation, you know he turned it right back around on the Democrats. But the reality is the Republicans are in charge, and the fact of the matter is, gas prices and grocery prices were going down until the war started. The war in Iran is going to go on for a very long time, ladies and gentlemen. There's just no other way to say that. We are going to be in a quagmire in Iran. There's no off-ramp at this point. So that means higher gas prices, higher grocery prices, and, you know, as much as manufacturing jobs are coming back to America, it is still very difficult for young people to get out there and to buy that first starter home. So we'll get into more of that coming up after the break. 901-260-5926. That's our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Don't forget, head over to Amazon, leave us a positive review of the book, and get yourself a copy of the book, The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. All right, President Trump is President Trump's a little fired up. So the president taking to Truth Social on Wednesday to share a list of grievances on how Republicans are messing up their midterm chances, and I'm cleaning this up as best I can. So after I share this, I'll explain some analysis. I'll give you some analysis here. Anyway, the president sharing a July 14th post from an influencer, Matt Van Swall, which included a long list of things the president has touted as accomplishments, including negative net migration, fentanyl trafficking being down in a second term, and then this lengthy post. Swall wrote, "I don't think the GOP fully grasps how badly they are messing up right now. I'm cleaning this up for you." Swall said people are miffed at Republicans because they're not seeing the major reforms they expected. And I want to read this. "They are really not seeing the reforms, and they're really mad about it. No true accountability, no true mass deportations, no meaningful decrease in the deficit, lots of very long vacations and no work, no bills being passed that reduce the government involvement in their lives. I'm very worried the GOP is sleepwalking toward a midterm reckoning they don't see coming. People are ticked off," again, cleaning this up, "people are ticked off that they voted Trump into office and then the GOP continues to slow walk every reform people want. Where are all the DOGE cuts that were promised? Where is the SAVE Act? Why haven't we defunded the Taliban yet? Why haven't we defunded the Taliban? Why are bills passing the House and then disappear in the Senate? Why are the GOP still funding left-wing NGOs that target and hate MAGA Republicans? Why are members of the GOP pushing for mass amnesty instead of mass deportations? People are waking up and they aren't happy about it. People believe they were voting for the Trump agenda, and instead many feel like they're getting the same old Washington. If Republicans in Congress don't start producing tangible results, they're going to discover that frustration has consequences, and by the time they realize how deep-seated that frustration is, it may already be too late." The president also took a dig at Republicans in an interview this month with Punchbowl News. The president, while he is facing the worst polling ever, he insisted the public is not angry but they're angry with Republicans. He said, quote, "They're angry at Republicans, but they're not angry at me." Trump said he hopes Republicans vote in the midterm elections, but he understands they're very angry. The question is, will they vote? Because a lot of them are very angry at Republicans. The president has expressed frustrations with GOP lawmakers on a number of issues. Most recently, he's lashed out at Senate Republicans for not passing the Save America Act. So, ladies and gentlemen, is the president right to be upset here? And is the president right to call out the Republicans on all of these issues? I mean, we've been talking about this for a very long time on the show, and it is a disturbing situation. It's disturbing because this is what the Republicans were elected to do. And this is why the Republicans are not able to campaign on any specific issue, because they haven't done anything. And I will tell you, this event coming up in Dallas, the midterm convention, I suspect what's going to happen here is they're going to try and pivot and make this election about Donald Trump. But I'm just telling you, I don't think that's going to work, because the Republican voters know Trump's not the problem here. The problem would be the Republicans on Capitol Hill. The problem would be cable news, which, by the way, these conservative cable news companies are killing the conservative movement. Look, what just happened yesterday in South Carolina with Congressman Ralph Norman going down in defeat, Senator Darlene Graham winning the runoff election, and she did it only because Donald Trump gave her the endorsement, and also because Fox News actively endorsed and campaigned for this woman. Now, I hate to break it to you, but Darlene Graham is not a conservative. Darlene Graham is barely a moderate Republican. And you mark my words on this, ladies and gentlemen, don't be surprised if she votes alongside people like Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins. the people of South Carolina made a grave mistake. By the way, I believe open primaries there in South Carolina, which means a lot of Democrats. And that's, by the way, that's one of the reasons why Lindsey Graham was able to stay in power as long as he did. So Democrats are able to vote in Republican Party business. And I got a big problem with that. Got to lock down those primaries so we can make sure we're actually electing conservatives. And I feel really bad for Ralph Norman. He did as well as he possibly could. But again, when the president of the United States is out there campaigning for the liberal Republican in the race, I mean, what are you going to do? It's unfortunate, but that's where we're at. So anyway, I'm curious to hear from you on the president's assessment. And again, this is not coming. I mean, we've talked about these issues, but I'm glad to see the president actually understanding what's at stake here. Maybe, just maybe, what they ought to do. I mean, if we really wanted, and the Republicans don't have the momentum. They don't have the big mo. So maybe one of the ways they could do that is to call everybody back to Washington, get everybody back from these vacations, and say, all right, we've got to get the rest of the president's agenda across the finish line. Work around the clock. Get the Save America Act back. Blow up the filibuster. If they do that, if the Republicans would have the courage to do that, I think the American people would respond in kind. But right now, it's a little dicey. I'm just telling you, it is a little dicey what's going to happen in November. All right, we've got to take a break here. 901-260-5926, our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. By the way, President Trump on with Glenn Beck today, and the president said he would sign legislation banning Sharia law in the United States. Let's take a listen.
We have so many enemies, I feel, like inside our own gates. We have the DSA. Right. And we have Islam, the Red-Green Alliance, something I put up on the chalkboard when I was at Fox. And I said, this is going to happen. And everybody said that they'll never work together. And that's exactly what's happening. Would you push for or sign a No Sharia Law Act for America? And when it comes to the Marxists, what advice do you have for the GOP to begin to relate to the people who feel like there is an affordability crisis in America, especially for the youth, and the Marxists are playing on that and exploiting all of that?
Yeah.
What advice do you have?
Yeah, I would say two things. Number one, on Sharia law, I would absolutely say that's not this country. There's no Sharia law. And you do have pockets of it, as you know. I would say no. And you go to London, you go to Paris. It's almost like a second way of life. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I would absolutely be on your side on that, or on a lot of other people's side, too. Because, you know, you and I have people that I think we're more based on common sense than we are on ideology. It's all about good politics is all about common sense anyway. But I would absolutely prohibit the Sharia law thing. And it is happening in this country a little bit. And when we see it, we take it out, and you have to take it out. You have one system. We have a great system. Sometimes it's very frustrating, but it's the best there is that I can see.
Yeah, well, I'm certainly glad to hear that. I think the issue would be Congress. Would Congress be willing to push forward any sort of legislation that would ban Sharia law? Sharia law is just completely incompatible with Western civilization, and it's completely incompatible with the United States Constitution. I was doing an interview early this morning for the book, and Dylan, you can back me up here. I literally sun up to sundown when I'm not doing this radio show. We're doing book interviews.
I can vouch for that.
A lot of them.
Yep.
And we love it. It's been a lot of fun, but it's a lot of work, and it's you know, there are long and complicated conversations sometimes. And one of them was an easier one today, when I told the host, he asked me, he goes, well, what's the biggest challenge facing America? And I said, the biggest challenge facing America right now is the rise of Islamic politics, political Islam, and also the rise of communism. I mean, it really is that simple. Dwight D. Eisenhower, going back to the 1950s, Eisenhower knew that communism was a dangerous thing facing America, and the only way to fight communism was not through politics, but it was through a spiritual solution, which is why Eisenhower was really one of the most vocal presidents when it came to talking about his faith in God. It was Eisenhower who advanced the notion that we are one nation under God. And here we are so many years later, and we're facing the same problems we were dealing with back in the 1950s. So, again, I appreciate what the president is doing here. But, yeah, the biggest threat facing our nation right now, political Islam and communism. Let's go to the phone lines, 901-260-5926. Tom in Houston, Texas, joining us. Hi, Tom. What's on your mind?
Hey, Todd. I'm here to help you, buddy. You quoted a poll from TSU, Texas Southern University.
Yes.
Here in Houston. Concerning Tallarico and Ken Paxton. And don't get me wrong, I think Ken Paxton has a lot of work to do, but TSU is one of the most liberal institutions. And I say that along with, you know, like prisons are institutions as well. But they are not to be, I don't trust any poll results coming out of there more than I would, you know, the heat here in Texas, I tell you. But you need to do some research on TSU before you start quoting their polls.
Well, Tom, I mean, look, you can make that argument out of every poll. And Tom, hear me on this. And both parties do this. They say, you know, if the poll looks great for Ken Paxton, oh, that's the best poll in the world. The same poll could come back later and say, actually, Tallarico's ahead. Well, that's the worst poll in America. So you can either believe the polls or not. But the reality is that's not the only poll out there that shows Tallarico ahead. So you can say that some sort of a vast, you know, right-wing conspiracy or left-wing conspiracy. But you're saying, though, that Ken Paxton needs to do work. So what does he need to do a better job of?
First off, he needs to campaign. And I don't care if it's kissing babies or going and standing with farmers in their fields or cattlemen around. I mean, if I was him, I'd get a bunch of cattlemen and I'd go against what Trump just did with the foreign beef. Okay? When you raise cattle, it's a 3 to 7 year process of building your herd, and they're going to allow the cheap cuts of meat to come in. And what that does is that takes away the core business of beef. Selling the high cut, your sirloins, now brisket. Brisket used to be a throwaway beef. But, you know, get a bunch of ranchers behind me and say, Trump has messed up here, and I'm trying to speak with him about how the cattle business is hurting here in the state of Texas. We love the state of Texas. We love the cattle. And we need to make money, not give away products from foreigners, you know. And
So he's not doing any of that right now? Is that what you're saying, Tom?
I tell you, I'm a pretty good consumer of the news. And I have not seen Ken Paxton in front of a camera himself. You know, not a story about the campaign as far as, you know, polls or whatever. I haven't seen his team put on an event in a good 3 or 4 weeks, okay? And then they caught him vacationing in London with some woman, you know. And, of course, he just got divorced. I don't know how his wife put up with him for so long, because he was, you know, not the best husband in the world, but we're not electing a husband. I think he's a great fighter. You can see what he's done with the immigration issue against Biden, against Obama, for the state of Texas. He will fight for
Let me jump in here, Tom, and I want to bring in our national listening audience so they can understand what you and I are talking about here. So instead of celebrating America's birthday on American soil, on Texas soil, on the 4th of July, Ken Paxton was with his new lover taking a tour of Europe. He was on a European vacation on the nation's 250th birthday. And to your point, Tom, it sounds like that decision has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
Well, yeah, and when you're going for an election, this is strictly my opinion, but you don't want to do anything that's going to rub 20% or more of the people the wrong way, you know?
So
you need to...
No. I hear what you're saying, but is it possible, Tom, that some of the people they interviewed for this poll could be saying exactly what you're saying, because it does sound like you're a little frustrated and you think Ken Paxton should be doing more to try to get himself elected.
I agree with your last statement, but there's no way in that place, I won't say it, that I would vote for Tallarico.
Yeah, okay? No. Tom, and I don't think that's it. I'm willing to say this, that what could happen is you could have Republicans just stay home and not vote. And again, I don't live in Texas. All I can tell you is I was in Dallas last Sunday I was at First Baptist Church, Dallas, talked to some very high profile Republicans, and Tom, they're concerned about Ken Paxton. I'm just telling you flat out, they're concerned about him being able to win.
Well, I'm concerned about it too, but I'm going to vote for it.
Good. Yeah, I would encourage that. Let me ask you this. University of Texas, they've got a poll out with Texas Political Project. They've got Governor Abbott ahead in his race to win the governor's race. Is that a pretty good poll, University of Texas?
Well, the University of Texas is a big liberal institution too.
Okay.
You're talking about the Longhorns in Austin. Correct.
Yeah. They've got University of Texas, Texas Politics Project poll. They've got Greg Abbott ahead, so he's winning his race right now. But that same polling data, the Attorney General, Ken Paxton, is trailing James Tallarico. So there's some more polling data out there. Look, all of these polls may be off kilter, but from what you just told me, Tom, I suspect there are a lot of Republicans that feel the same way you do about Ken Paxton and the lack of effort that he's offering up here. All right, Tom, I got to run. Folks, hour three of the big show coming up. We're talking to the RNC. Hopefully we'll get some new details on what the midterms are looking like. Also, Chris Ruddy, the CEO of Newsmax, he'll be joining us as well. Stick around, everybody. We'll be right back.
From the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Great to have you with us today. By the way, ToddStarnes.com, that is our website address. All sorts of great news and information for you there. Some great stories as well. Of course, our tribute to Dolly Parton. Hope you'll take some time to head over to the website today and be sure to check that out. Also, want to share this and pass this information along. Many of you know that we broadcast our national show from my home city of Memphis, Tennessee. I also serve on the Tennessee Association of Broadcasters on the board of directors. And we are making an announcement today, and I wanted to pass this along because I think every radio station in America should be doing what we are going to be doing tomorrow. And at 9 o'clock Eastern time, every radio station in the entire state of Tennessee is going to be offering a tribute to Dolly Parton. And one of the things we're going to be doing is playing the song, her original song, I Will Always Love You. Not the Whitney Houston version, but the version that Dolly Parton first recorded and wrote. And that's going to happen at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Every radio station in the entire state of Tennessee, those of you listening to us on our flagship station, KWAM, you'll be hearing that. And we also are inviting all of you folks, if you're out driving during that time, to turn on your headlights out of respect for Dolly. So all of that tomorrow on radio stations all around the nation, but specifically right here in Tennessee. And by the way, Dylan, I don't know if you saw, but last night in Nashville, there was a traffic jam. They actually had to call out the Tennessee Highway Patrol to run traffic in front of Dolly's home, that beautiful mansion she has out there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, lots of people loving Dolly right now.
Yep, showing up, and they're putting flowers, kind of like what they did. It reminded me of Graceland when Elvis died. And, I mean, thousands of people turned out. They're on what is now known as Elvis Presley Boulevard. So just an amazing time. All right, 901-260-5926, our telephone number. Want to go right away to the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. Say hello to Ali Triolo, who is the Election Integrity Communications Director for the Republican National Committee. Ali, good to have you with us. And before we jump into politics, one of the interesting things, somebody sent me a note. They were in D.C., and they were in their newsroom, and they said when word of Dolly Parton's death came down, the people who were shocked, it was not just the old folks, it was the young people as well. I mean, she really did impact a lot of folks across the spectrum.
You're exactly right. I think something that has been so beautiful to see is in an age where it is political, people are on social media, her quotes getting shared across party lines about living with intention and gratitude and grace and poise. This is something that all generations need to be reminded of. Even before I got on this show with you, I was talking to my mom and she was revisiting some of her childhood memories set to Dolly and talked about how last night she and my dad were playing some of her greatest hits in the kitchen. So I think it's beautiful what your state is doing to honor her legacy. And I do hope all others follow suit.
You know, it really is sort of a sense of loss. There are very few people left that generate universal affection, you know, no matter your politics. And I guess politics sort of flavors everything these days for better or for worse. But I really appreciated the fact that she did keep her politics to herself. I think she said once in an interview, if you want to know where I stand on something, go listen to one of my songs because I write about them in my songs. We need more of that, I think, in the world of entertainment.
Yeah, you're exactly right. People go to watch football games or listen to music as a way to escape and be entertained. And I think when we saw this, interjection of politics into football, that was really a turning point for Americans that looked at that sport as a way to come together as a nation, cheer for one team. And then when it got political, it turned off so many football fans. And obviously, I work for the RNC. Politics is something I am deeply passionate about. The Republican Party, I believe, is the greatest party on earth. But there are some things that are sacred, such as, of course, honoring Dolly Parton's legacy and right. Other ways we as Americans celebrate our nation.
All right. Let's talk politics. And one of the big issues on the minds of voters, I know CNN just the other day touting a poll that shows most Democrats still believe that we should show some form of ID at the ballot box. It seems to me this is more of a 90-10 issue with voters, and yet the Democrats are stopping the Save America Act. And certainly in the Senate, we've watched Republican leadership, and of course they're blaming it all on the Democrats, but the reality is the Save America Act is not getting across the finish line. How important is that issue? I mean, what are you hearing from voters out there?
It's crucial, and I'm glad you're bringing up the polling of everyday Americans. There was even a recent poll where self-proclaimed socialists agree that photo ID and proof of citizenship to vote are common sense. We know it is the law that only Americans should be voting in American elections. That is why this week we saw a great win coming out of the Supreme Court, allowing President Trump's executive order for mail-in ballots to move forward, which would ensure that these ballots are only going to American citizens. It's common sense. It's 90-10, exactly what you said. And it's an issue that we are fully backing here at the RNC.
Of course, we just had Congressman Jim Jordan, chairman of House Judiciary, on the show in the last hour, and he brought up the story out of New Jersey where you've got thousands of non-citizens who were allowed to vote in elections. And, Allie, you really do have to wonder if that's happening in New Jersey. You have to imagine it's happening in a place, you know, like California or Illinois or some of these other blue states.
Yeah, and California's attorney general even admitted that they have no system to tracking non-citizens on their voter rolls. Just last month, President Trump gave a very important election integrity address to the American people and cited states like California and others where there are hundreds of thousands of non-citizens in total on the voter rolls. And I'm glad you're bringing up New Jersey because the RNC, in partnership with the New Jersey GOP, actually exposed those non-citizens a month before Mikey Sherrill made that announcement. And again, these are just people that have asked to be removed from the voter rolls, meaning it truly is the tip of the iceberg.
You know, I want to play some audio here for us. This is coming out of Minnesota, from Michigan, where a state representative has described the situation there about removing a dead voter from the township rolls. Let's take a listen to State Representative Rachel Schmidt.
Respectfully, Representative Schmidt, you know, the fact that there are, in fact, some errors that happen in the system. Every system has errors, and it doesn't mean that there are not safeguards in place. There are safeguards, and you as a clerk, having done many registrations previously, understand that there's a process that you go through. And you can ask NASA. There's no process that doesn't have some error inherent in the system.
Okay. Thank you. And you're very right. When I was a clerk, there were lots of errors in the system. That's largely why I am here. I took off a dead voter in my township. And guess what? That dead voter was put back on. Not by me. That was done by the Secretary of State's office. So we need to do a lot of fixing here in our elections. When I was a clerk at Martin Township, there was a family member who at one point was registered at my in-law's home. And that family member had died nearly 20 years prior. They were put on the rolls at 2020. Mm. They were mailed voter application ballots without the authorization to do that. That's the local clerk's job. So I went in there, removed her from the voting rolls because I know firsthand this family member is dead and deceased. Just this past election cycle, lo and behold, that person was put back on the voter rolls and has a card of the early voting location polling that I actually have and can produce. Mm. And that's a problem.
Yeah, I would say it's a problem. Do you, Allie, do you see that's a problem? Democrats refusing to remove dead people from the ballot?
Well, that is why the RNC is a public records request in 48 states right now, including Washington, D.C., to take a look at states' voter rolls because it is federal law that states accurately maintain their voter rolls, removing dead people, removing people that have moved to other places. It is pivotal. And especially with all of these blue states wanting vote by mail for all, we cannot have ballots floating around with dead people's names on them, ripe for fraud, ripe rather for other people to vote those ballots. The most important thing we do as a nation is vote for who will run our country. And we need a system that is worthy and secure of that responsibility.
Maybe you can help me out here, Allie. I've been really frustrated trying to understand why this happens. But again, we don't know what happens in the hereafter. We know what the good book says. But for whatever reason, the dead people always vote Democrat. Have we been able to figure out why that is? Why do only dead people vote Democrat?
Yeah, and when it came to our public records request out of New Jersey, the majority of the non-citizens that were on the voter rolls where we got proof of their voting, they were all registered Democrat as well. So, of course, these Democrats, they don't want secure elections because the dead people and the non-citizens are voting in their favor. We have even clips here at the RNC that we've uncovered of Democrats admitting the quiet part out loud and saying that if non-citizens cannot vote in our elections, that they stand to have a harder time of keeping their power. Why would that be? Why would that be, Todd?
It is a great question, Allie. Before we let you go, this big Supreme Court case in the fall, the RNC's proof of citizenship case, we understand that is expected to be heard. How big of a deal is this, again, getting back to election integrity?
I mean, it's a blockbuster case. It's a two-part case. Number one, we're defending Arizona's proof of citizenship law to make sure only Americans are voting in American elections. And also, we are defending the right for non-citizens to be removed from voter rolls no matter when they are discovered on their rolls. A lot of places have these 90-day blackout periods so that these non-citizens have to stay on these voter rolls, which we know is terrible when it comes to having them gain access to ballots. So we're excited to see the Supreme Court take this up in October, and the RNC will never stop fighting for secure elections.
All right. Well, Allie, we're gonna leave it there. Again, a lot happening, of course, gearing up for the big RNC midterm, and we'll be talking more about that later. But again, voter integrity and election integrity, that is something we've got to pay attention to. Allie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Allie Triolo, ladies and gentlemen, she is the comms director for election integrity at the Republican National Committee. Got to take a break here, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
That other thing, because Elvis was ready to record it. I told my friends and people that he was recording it, and they were in town to do the recording. They had invited me down to the session. And Colonel Tom Parker calls me the day before and says, now, you do know that Elvis is recording your song, and you do know that Elvis don't record anything that he don't publish or at least get half the publishing on. I said, really?
Which is to say he would have the rights.
He would
to the
have
song.
The rights, at least half of the rights to the publishing of the song. I said, I can't do that. This song's already been a hit with me, and this is in my publishing company, and obviously this is going to be one of my most important copyrights, and I can't give you half the publishing. Of course, that's stuff that I'm leaving for my family. And he said, well, then we can't record the song. And I was just heartbroken. I said, well, I'm really sorry, but I can't do that.
Well,
so I didn't.
That took guts.
Well, it didn't to me. It seemed to be the thing to do. It hurt me because I was so disappointed that I was going to have to tell my friends Elvis didn't record it. But I just knew that that was not right, and that was not... If it had been maybe... If I didn't have my own publishing company, had the song not already been a hit, it might have been different. But I couldn't give somebody half of a song that had already been number one, and that was... You know, was evident, had already proved itself.
Well,
so.
You had some redemption, Whitney Houston, then
well,
many
yes.
years later.
That's true. When Whitney recorded, I was like, oh, good, because now I own 100% of the publishing, 100% of the writing. And I did really well with that. But I didn't blame Elvis, and I didn't blame Colonel Tom either. It was a decision I had to make at the time, and I'm glad I did. Well, it was overwhelming. The way she did it, David Foster, who arranged and produced it, and Kevin Costner, who's the one that just, you know, wanted to do the song in the movie. But when I heard her sing it, because I'd always loved her singing anyway. I mean, what a voice she had. I mean, at that time, nobody could out-sing her. But when I heard it, my heart just stopped. I just couldn't believe that my little song, my little simple song that was written straight from my heart, you know, about a subject that we all know and relate to one way or another, whether it's someone that's died or kids going off to school. People relate to that song in so many ways. But anyway, when I heard her sing it, I could not believe it. I was driving at that time from my office in Nashville to my house in Brentwood, and I heard it when she started singing that a cappella. I thought, well, I thought, what is, you know, if I should stay, and it took a minute to realize. And then when it went into the, with the music part where she's singing, I honestly thought I was going to have a heart attack. It was one of the most overwhelming things. The way she did it was spectacular.
And the Grammy goes to Whitney Houston!
Oh, this is so nice. Thank you so much. Thank you. Listen, I got a lot of folks to thank, so I'm going to put this down for a second, okay? Dolly, of course, coming from you, this is truly an honor. You wrote a beautiful song. Thank you so much for writing such beautiful songs, really.
people say, well, that's Whitney's song. I said, that's fine. You can give her the credit. I just want the cash. So send that check on to me. But it was her song. The way that she did that to make that such a worldwide hit, mine would have never have done that. But since then, people have done it, you know, as instrumentals, as duets, and all of that. So it's just one of those simple little songs that says nothing and yet everything.
Yeah, I mean, it really, it's a beautiful song. And going back to that interview, she went on to talk about how as much as she, if she had to give up everything else, the only thing she would keep would be her ability to write songs and, you know, these stories. And that's really, you know, that came from the East Tennessee mountain culture, that Appalachian culture, where storytelling, and that's how, you know, that's how people lived their lives back in those days. They told stories on the front porch of their cabins. And for me, I think, you know, that's part of our culture. That's part of our heritage as Southerners. And to see her story, I think that's one of the reasons why she really resonated with so many people, but especially those of us who live in the Southern states, and especially those of us who live in Tennessee. And Dylan, say what you will, but there are a lot of great musicians that came from Tennessee.
Amen to that.
We'll throw in Timberlake. I'm feeling generous today. You know, he's from Memphis area.
He Millington. Gets half.
Yeah, that's okay. He did bring Sexy Back, so, you know, we'll give him that. All right, hang tight. Chris Ruddy from Newsmax joins us next. This is the Todd Starnes Show. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Good to have you with us. Hour three of the big show. By the way, our telephone number, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. All right. Well, no doubt about it, the midterm elections. How are you feeling, ladies and gentlemen? Are you feeling good? Are you a little nervous? We've been hearing from just about everybody on this particular issue. And a lot of folks are just, I think they're concerned. That's all. I think they're concerned. And they want to hear from these Republicans. Look, if you're Ken Paxton and you're running for the U.S. Senate, and you know you've got a lot of baggage, and the guy's got baggage, what are you going to do? He's got baggage. So what do? You don't go to Europe on the 4th of July. You stay here in America, and you campaign on American soil, preferably in Texas. So I just, it's beyond me, it's just beyond me what these folks are doing. The sense of entitlement, I think, among some Republicans is really setting people off, and it's rubbing people the wrong way. And that's just the reality of it. Meanwhile, you've got folks out there taking full advantage of President Trump, and I think the president is right here. This has absolutely nothing to do with him. It has everything to do with the do-nothing Congress. So we're going to be talking to our friend Chris Ruddy over at Newsmax just momentarily as he joins the program. Chris has a lot to celebrate as Newsmax continues to go very, very well. By the way, I want to go back to this polling data from CNN, cut number 9.
Take a look here. Favorite photo ID to vote. 85% of white people favorite. 82% of Latino. 76% of black Americans favorite. So the bottom line is this. Voter ID is not controversial in this country. A photo ID to vote is not controversial in this country. It is not controversial by party, and it is not controversial by race. The vast majority of Americans agree with Nicki Minaj that, in fact, you should have a photo ID to be able to vote.
Yeah, I mean, this is common sense that we're dealing with here. And by the way, the sex and gender revolutionaries, they are still controlling the school boards. I want you to listen to this guy. He's from North Carolina, and they're all very upset because they've got a transitioning teacher in the local school, and the dad is really frustrated over what's happening. Cut number 23.
I have three small children at Middle Creek Elementary, and I'm with Middle Creek Parental Rights. For years, people questioned certain institutional orthodoxies, or people who questioned them, were intimidated into believing that disagreement itself is a defect of character. We got all kinds of newspeak vocab for policing dissent, not to answer the argument, but to morally classify the person making it. Misgendering, dead naming, cisnormativity, heteronormative bigotry, transphobic. It worked pretty well around 2016, and it worked really well in 2020. But its shelf life is expired. Ordinary Americans are remembering something basic that we can and should just say things. Things like, I don't subscribe to gender theory. I'm a Christian and a faithful believer in Jesus Christ. In fact, I claim religious exemption from it for myself and for my family. I reject critical theory, postmodern progressivism, especially in elementary education.
Yeah, I get where this guy's coming from here. And it's still, it's really frustrating that moms and dads are still having to deal with this. I really do hope the administration does abolish the Department of Education, return control of those schools back to the local communities where they're going to be able to eradicate this sex and gender ideology. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Well, for those of you who have read my new book called The Golden Age, and if you've read the preface, you know who our next guest is. As a matter of, these are like the first words of the book. My first visit to Mar-a-Lago was at the invitation of Chris Ruddy, the chief executive officer of Newsmax. Our dinner party was seated on the alfresco patio with a breathtaking view of the manicured lawn and brilliant blue waters of the swimming pool. I was keenly aware that up until that moment in my life, my idea of fine dining was Uncle Herschel's favorite breakfast at Cracker Barrel. In the South, we have a saying for a situation like that. I was honored to be living high on the hog. And with that, we bring in the CEO of Newsmax, Chris Ruddy. Chris, great to have you on the show today.
Hot. It looks great. Everything, it looks like a major network you have there.
Well, we have a great team. We have a fun team here, and I sure do appreciate that. And I appreciate all the things that you have done for me, and we're so excited about the new book. We're getting rave reviews all over the country.
Even President Trump said he's read the book, right?
He has, and he gave us the thumbs up, and what we had Speaker Mike Johnson as well. And again, I just can't say enough great things about you, and thank you for bringing me into the Newsmax fold.
Well, thank you. You've been a force before Newsmax was around and in media, and you're continuing to be that in the radio, on television. So we appreciate it, Todd, and keep up your good work.
Well, again, there's a lot to talk about, Chris. We've got the midterms, and you guys did the big debate a few nights ago there in South Carolina. Did you ever imagine that Newsmax would be a major player like it is? You know, when you've started the magazines and the newsletters, and now just the incredible success that Newsmax has seen.
Well, I don't really imagine a lot of things. I just keep doing what I'm doing and keep building and growing. And I do think that people, it's not Chris Ruddy doing this, right? It's the millions of people that are watching us, tuning in Newsmax. They're downloading our app on their phones. They're going to cable. They're going to streaming to watch your show. And they're the ones that we owe gratitude to and have to point to our success. And they're coming to us because there's not a lot of alternatives, and the media is so bad out there, and we're seeing it. They're going to get really bad leading up to this election.
But still, I mean, it takes a person with vision, and you've been that visionary, and a lot of folks may not know this, but Newsmax is really now international, and that must be so exciting to see the Newsmax brand in many countries across Europe right now.
Well, we're in 100 countries now with Newsmax, which is amazing. They're carrying our American channel, the cable channel, or our streaming. And then we have a number of countries that even like us so much, they start putting us in local language. We just launched Newsmax Poland in the Polish language. We're working with partners there that do that. We're hoping to expand to a lot more other countries. Again, I think it's this demand, right? It's not just in this country. We actually have a lot more media diversity than many other countries, including Europe. So there's a real demand for what we're offering, which is sensible news. We always say we're independent with a conservative perspective. And I think that's why President Trump likes us so much. So many people have, there's 15 million plus people that have downloaded our app, which is free on their smartphone. And they can go to iPhone or Android and they can start watching your show anywhere in the world. Very few cable channels allow that to happen. So it's a big, big thing for us. And we're really excited about the future.
We've done book signings in Southern California, Chino Hills, and was just in Dallas this past Sunday. And the numbers of people that came up and said, you know, they loved watching my show on Newsmax 2. You know, they love what's happening at Newsmax. And to a person, they said, thank you for what you guys are doing. And I think it's that going back to that idea of real news for real people. And I think that's really resonating with folks out there, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, we don't give a, you know, there's a lot of differences between us and Fox. If you people say, well, what's the difference? Watch us. Look at our websites today. Look at the Newsmax site compared to the Fox News website today. You'll see the difference. You'll see what we focus on, the issues we care about, the things we're reporting. You'll see the things they're interested in. I think you'll agree that we're the more serious and the ones more in sync with their values. But we let people decide that, right? We're not telling them to believe that. You go on a lot of networks, everybody's telling you what to believe.
Yeah.
My view is let people, we have Democrats come on. We have people pro-Trump, against Trump. We're not afraid because we know that when the people can really make up their own minds, that that's better for everyone.
I completely agree with that assessment. And, you know, we love those opportunities to debate. You know, Donna Brazile, for example, has come on the radio show and we've had pretty ferocious debates. But we also talk about the finer points of making a great gumbo. She's a great chef on the side. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that's sort of missing in politics. You get so laser focused on the politics, you forget the humanity of the person as well. And I wonder if our country is really in a bad fix because of that.
The polarization is huge. You know, they'll blame a lot of it on President Trump. But then when you look back, you see what they did to him over the 4 years he was out of office that were not very nice, right?
Yeah.
Multiple prosecutions, many lawsuits, negative press day in and day out. I think one of the reasons he won is that people felt like they were so over the top. So, you know, people, I think, are seeing now that the president really lived up to his promises. I mean, the guy has had an amazing track record. The border was secured even before he really took office, almost, because they knew he was coming. They stopped coming across the border. The Trump accounts, the Trump prescription drugs, I mean, the lowest prices in 40 years. Who would have thought of that, right? He's done all of that stuff.
And that was really, you know, the foundation for writing the Golden Age. I was just getting frustrated with people saying, well, you know, the president hasn't accomplished all that much. So we just went back and looked at the promises he made and whether or not he delivered on those promises. And by and large, he has. And again, ushering in the Golden Age for me, Chris, and I know that you're a man of faith as well, as am I. And I really believe that the Golden Age is really not so much about affordability or lower gas prices as it is about restoring those traditional American values. And I'm wondering, you know, based on where we are now, do you think the president has done that? Has he ushered in this Golden Age?
Well, I think it's early, right? He's a year and a half into his presidency, and the amazing things he's done, I don't think any other president in a year and a half.
Yeah.
People forget, like, so people are angry with him. It's only a year and a half. He whipped inflation. Biden left him with a mess. He passed the big, beautiful bill with massive tax cuts and rebates and all of that. No taxes on tips. He's done the Trump accounts. He's done prescription drugs. He's done a whole bunch of things. Now, the Iran war is a bit of a outlier, right? But I think he's showing leadership there. And then the long run, that will pay off. But it always, sometimes these things are harder than they first appear. But he's showing real leadership that other presidents had ignored this issue. The Iranian government, the regime there, is terrible. They are a threat to America and Israel and the whole Western world. And I think the president has shown decisive leadership I think there, where I would criticize the Trump administration is the lack of communication. You know, the things we talk about today, Todd, they're just not talking about at the White House. I mean, it's sort of strange. You know, the president's a great communicator, but it's just him. Like, who else is talking about these things? And sometimes to get Trump administration people to talk about it, you have to sometimes pull teeth. They don't even want to go on air. It's very strange.
You look at the Democrats, and they are leading in a lot of the polling data. I was talking to some high-profile conservatives in Texas. They are really concerned about whether or not Kim Paxton is going to be able to win in November, which is sort of shocking to me. But I just sense from the callers on our show, there does seem to be a disconnect here, especially on the issues of things like affordability, you know, the gas prices, grocery prices, and these Gen Z kids that have the good jobs, but they're just not able to get that first starter home. Are you sensing that as well?
I wouldn't say they have good jobs. I mean, I think the affordability crisis is real. You know, I think sometimes we can learn some things from Mamdani. I mean, I don't like him. I think he's an anti-Semite, and he's definitely socialistic. Communist might be a little strong, but he's definitely a socialist. But, you know, they're answering. They see that people don't have money. They don't have money for food, for rent, especially the younger people. They don't have jobs. And he's like, I'll give you this. I'll give you free groceries, free rent, free housing, free this. And it sounds great, right? Everything's for free. But somebody has to pay for it.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that system, that socialism system collapses. The Republicans and the Trump administration, we should be answering those concerns about how people are going to get jobs, how they're going to increase. Now, the president has a lot of good plans on that. But sometimes I think the Republicans just don't seem to answer those issues as well as the Democrats in terms of responding. And I think that there are ways, like, we see a lot of companies in America, big companies, really are semi-monopolies, and they, you know, I could give you an example. The cell phone bill that you have, you know, you Americans pay 5 to 10 times more Europeans pay on their cell phones. Why? Our government gives 3 companies, led by AT&T, all the spectrum for cell phones. So there's no real competition. They 3 of them just divide out decide on a price, and everybody has to pay it. Too bad. You have no alternatives. In Europe, they warehouse the spectrum. Any company can go and access it. It's not given to someone to control. So it's and their system in that case is better, and it keeps prices lower. And you see this in a lot of other industries. You can go through many of them where the government is essentially given a handful of companies control, and it's not good. So I think this is an issue led to tremendous income disparity. And this is causing a lot of the economic and upheaval and social issues, and then now politically. And I think the Republicans have much better answers.
No doubt about it.
More free enterprise, more competition, more investment, more helping the little guy rise up, more helping. I remember when I was young, all the Republicans were always known the party of small business. Now they're sort of known as the party of big business and the Washington swamp. That's not good. And I think it's causing a lot of angst in the base, and that's why they're not as excited this election.
Chris, you know how the business goes. We've got to take a mandatory break to pay our bills here, but we just want to say thank you for coming on. Thank you for the great work that Newsmax is doing, the great team that you've assembled there. And thank you for publishing my book, too. I really appreciate that.
Get your book on Amazon, number one. Number two, download our free app on your iPhone, Android, or your home TV, Newsmax. It's free. And number three, check out Newsmax on the New York Stock Exchange. We're now a publicly traded company. And as I say, you can join the news revolution.
It's great advice, ladies and gentlemen. Follow it. The great Chris Ruddy, Chief Executive Officer of Newsmax. Chris, great to see you.
Great to see you. Thank you, Todd.
All right. Hang tight, everybody. Have to take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, it was a jam-packed day, ladies and gentlemen. And again, you heard Chris Ruddy. Be sure to get a copy of The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. You can find that at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you buy your books. Also, head over to the website, toddstearns.com. If you missed any of our great interviews, you're going to want to go back and listen to Chris Ruddy and also Jim Jordan, among others. You can do that by downloading our free podcast, all 3 hours of the Todd Stearns Radio Show. We take out the commercials, so you'll be able to, you know, enjoy the all 3 hours of the show, again, at toddstearns.com. All right, folks, get out there. Be safe. We'll be back tomorrow. This is the Todd Stearns Show.